Hey, everybody, welcome to Pittsburgh Comic Podcast number 402. Now, Happy New Year. We're recording this on New Year's Day. I missed all the football because I had to be open.
New decade. Wah, wah.
Yes. 2020 sounds like the future to me. So, thanks, Tim. Mm-hmm. So that's all I got. Just trying to think of witty banter at the beginning. But
the second decade of the podcast.
Yes. Ooh.
Entering
craziness. That's yeah. I can't believe we've broken 400. But. I'm Colin McMahon, owner of Pittsburgh Comics. Joining me tonight are
Dave,
Spencer.
Apparently, the only people that didn't have plans for today. So, I know Mike popped in. He's watching Doctor Who.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know what's up with Pat or Brandon. So.
To be fair, I never have plans.
Yeah, me neither. It's like I'm here, other than last week, but it was Thursday, and I did have plans. So. Not a lot. No news. Everybody's closed. But we did get some questions. Mm-hmm. Hang on. Why is my phone sideways? Okay. I've been wanting to incorporate Harry and Marley into the social media. And so Matthew Rosenberg sent a signed print with a little note thanking Pittsburgh Comics. Of Hawkeye number one, so Harry was laying down under the table, and I put the picture next to him and took a picture of him. I said, Harry says I thought it was there was going to be a dog or pizza, and Matthew Rosenberg responded back, "I'm so sad I let Harry down." So I thought that was funny. Okay,
Harry needs to make a cameo in a future issue.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, here we go. Zach asks, are the new boxes an improvement? Not really. Basically, what it went from, instead of having a seam on the bottom and flaps, it now has a flat bottom. It was never an issue that I was ever aware of. They had a piece of cardboard they'd put in there that would cover up any of the flap edges, so nothing was ever done. And if they're trying to save money on that piece of cardboard, maybe, but I can't see that being a huge deal to necessitate redesigning a box. The one downside is they used to be double thick cardboard, corrugated cardboard, and now they're single thick. So there's some concern there. I had really relatively little damage this week. The first week we did, but it was that ridiculously huge shipment and a busy week for UPS, and I think the boxes just weren't treated well. So we'll see. Overall, it's a little bit more of a pain. They don't break down as nice for here in the store, thus making them not reusable. Like, I used to have a lot of people moving would come get boxes, and we'd use them here for different things. And these, the only way to break them down is really to tear them apart. So they're not going to be reusable. I'm not quite sure what the purpose of that was. They don't fold flat nicely, so for recycling, I know here you have to slide it into a thing, and that's going to be a pain. So, yeah, overall, not super thrilled with the new boxes. Is the Image model broken? I don't know if the model's broken. I think, I guess maybe it is, because basically the way it worked before was they'd kind of make a name for themselves. Well, it used to be you'd go to Image, get your story pitched, and then get found by Marvel or DC, and that would be your big break. And then for a while it became you got big at Marvel, and you went there to do your creator thing, of Brian K. Vaughan, Matt Fraction.
Brubaker,
Hickman even. But right now they don't have a whole lot. They don't have a lot of, like, Rick Remender. I know Black Science ended. Deadly Class is still going. I have no idea what's going on with Seven to Eternity. So I'm not sure exactly what all is going on, but losing Walking Dead and Saga, I think, has definitely affected them greatly.
I think they really need a wave of, like, new writers that capture the imagination of people when, like, that whole era when Brubaker and Matt Fraction and some other people were doing stuff. And Robert Kirkman, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing's going to can hope to replace The Walking Dead for sales, but maybe that new book will the but man, it just seems like there's a lull in like great writers or writers are capturing the imagination of the reading public.
Well, I think too that like, you know, it's like any other like Marvel DC, they have you know, ups and downs. Theirs is just a little bit different because like everything's with it being creator owned, you know, they don't own as much of like the rights to the characters and like enforce people to, you know, make things and stuff like that. And then like I think a big part of it too is just that the next group, you know, they just kinda got done with finding like a new group, so like Rosenberg and, you know, and some of these other new people, and I just think that they have to wait and try to find that next section of writers and artists that, you know, like we were saying, new decade, new, you know, probably new talent.
Yeah. Hopefully, but I think, yeah, they definitely need to do something because they're kind of slipping. You know, we need a hit from there because, you know, people aren't coming in to get their other books, you know, and it's like, wow, you know, we're lucky if we can hit double digits on one. So, yeah, it may be broken. What is going on with the Luna Brothers? I don't know. I know one of them's doing some book, 20XX. I haven't read it. But, yeah, I loved when they did Girls and The Sword, and then we really haven't had anything from them like that. Alex and Ada, I know they did, but that didn't do a whole lot.
Did they do a Spider-Woman series or something? Or the art for it?
I don't know. That I don't remember.
I kind of remember that. Okay. But I could be wrong.
Do you have any personal experience with Instant Pots? No, I do not. I don't have one. I've never used one.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a cooking thing. It's like a pressure cooker. A new version of a pressure cooker.
I'll say, was that itchy or? Because that kind of sound like... Like, you know, the random food question thrown in.
Yeah,
there.
Could be. No, this is Zach. And then, is it just me or are trades smaller now with Marvel with 4-issue trade paperbacks? Yes.
The Marvel ones are terrible.
Yeah, they're getting really, really thin. Oof. So, yeah, I don't know what they're doing there. And then it's like 4 issues and then some random reprint to pad it a little, but... Yeah.
We were talking about a couple months ago whenever I was getting caught up on the Venom books, like, they would even those, they would have, like, a good, like, story arc, like a 5-6-page story or part story arc in it, but because of the paper and the stuff that they use, it just makes it look like I mean, I guess it takes up less room on your shelf, but I don't know, it doesn't seem to look as, like...
Yeah.
It doesn't feel as... Hi, Tim. It doesn't feel as good as when you're buying that. Like, you know, whenever you buy, like, a big, thick, like, heavy tray to, with the... Or at least with, like, the price point, you know?
So, yes. Okay. Now, Nick asks, what are you hoping for from Marvel and DC in 2020? Could be content-wise or business-wise. For me, just a plan. You to be looking at the year as a whole and have a goal at the end and how are you going to get there and things like that. Don't have, you know, a 2099 event going on the same time as an Annihilation event, as the same time as something else. You know, just plan things out, make, you know, have things build into one another. That's what I'd like from Marvel. DC, just get your act together. Things are... a little too chaotic over there. I'm still kind of angry about their big product dump that they did on the 18th, shipping almost all their books, and it just completely messed up the system, all because they had to hit their corporate numbers, which really made me mad. Just because, like, my invoice was double, but I didn't sell double, and you guys had so much stuff, it was overwhelming, and then nobody came in last week because... they spent so much the week before. They had so many books that they hadn't gotten through. There was no reason to come in. And even today was like a third of a Wednesday, you know, and just, I get it. It's a holiday and maybe people are doing stuff, but you know, oh, well that's out. Well, I can get that later. I'm still working through my big stack from that other week. Cause basically they ship twice as much of their regular issues. And then also every Black Label book and Doomsday Clock. And it was just overwhelming. Yeah, and I think it was unnecessary. Mm-hmm. The only reason they did that was to hit their year end, you know, get those books out for year end. And I think it was just really short sighted on their part. My other problem with that is people are going to be like, well, you know what? I really wasn't liking that book. And that was a really easy way to drop it. you know, because it was too much, or not add a book. That was another big problem, was they came out with that Wonder Woman Dead Earth Black Label book, and they came out with Year of the Villain Hell Arisen, and we weren't able to hand sell it because everybody was just talking about Doomsday Clock, and people missed it. It's like, if you've been reading Justice League and or Batman Who Laughs, you're probably going to want that, because Hell Arisen is Batman Who Laughs versus Lex Luthor. But since I couldn't tell anybody about it, everybody missed it. That was a $5 book. The other book was a $7 book. People weren't adding those. Yeah. So it was just kind of just, I think, a big, big mistake on their part. And they're going to feel it down the road. You know, the orders for issue twos are going to be much lower than they should have been. Mm-hmm. And for me personally, I have a little fear, you know, if they're going to bury those number ones, you know, when they have another number one in the book, it's like, well, how do I know you're not going to, you know, bury that one as well? So they just lost a little bit of faith, burying you guys in too much product and us in too much product. And now my shelves are really heavy from unsold stuff. And it's just kind of it was a mess, but they hit their goal. But good luck hitting your goal this year.
Yeah.
So what are you guys looking forward to or hoping to see from Marvel and or DC?
Like you said, with planning, that would go a long way toward everything. But hopefully there's like a book that really, for our sake and for your sake, you know, that really excites the public and wants to get them in the store.
Yeah.
Whether it be, you know, some Marvel or DC event, which I guess we don't really know about.
Right. Everything is cagey right now. You know, even the Free Comic Book Day solicits came out and they're all, you know, classified. It's like, no, it's not classified. You just don't know what it is yet.
Yeah.
That's all it is. We're going to do something. We don't know what yet. It's like, okay, just say that. Don't make it sound all super special.
I was looking at the Free Comic Book Day books, and they don't, you know, they have the blank covers, you know, for the
yeah, DC. That's what I mean. Yeah, classified. No, it's not classified. Yeah. You just haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
I would like to then manage their books a little bit better. Like, if Marvel's gonna have so many, like, if they're gonna have, like, 78 titles come out of a month, they need to have, like, it needs at least be some of the stuff, like, that I care about. Like, there needs to be, like, I know this X-Men thing is still pretty new, but, like, I'm, like, losing interest, like, with each issue as that thing's going on.
That's my fear, and they're coming out so fast.
Yeah, and, like, you know, you get these, like, kind of cult books like Moon Knight and stuff like that, and you know, you don't have him out on the shelf, well, you might not be able to sell, like, you know, you're not breaking the bank with that issue or with that series, but you know you can get a good, like, year and a half, almost 2 year run, you know, out of it if you have a good enough creative team on it, and just them using kind of different, like, characters that they haven't used for a while. Like, I like DC to have like an Animal Man, at least miniseries or something. Like, you know, these characters that, like, had books for a long time, not that long ago, but they're just not doing, like, anything with the characters. Yeah. So I guess better use of characters, I guess, in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd love to see. It's not going to happen, but, man, I wish DC could get the Hanna-Barbera license back.
Yeah, I wonder what happened there, but
because a lot of that stuff was really good. I just think there's so much things you could do with those characters, as evidenced by the Flintstones and Snagglepuss.
Well, you're talking about crossovers. That'd be cool to this year if we finally got another, like, Marvel DC crossover. Like,
well, yeah,
I didn't think that's gonna happen, but it'd be cool.
Well, it was mentioned in Doomsday Clock.
Yeah. It was, but yeah, and I think Rich Johnson took it at Bleeding Cool, going, "Oh, and this means this confirms." It's like, shut up.
In 2030,
he was just he was just having fun.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that would be. I wish they could get their act together and do something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Any writers or artists who don't have any current work going or announced, you hope announced projects? Off the top of my head, I can't.
Don't have anything
going on. Who don't have anything going on. I honestly don't know.
Well, Grant Morris has had the Green Lanterns, but I don't count that, so I wish Green Lantern he would have a different book that he could do, because I'm not feeling Green Lantern for some reason.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, I can't think of any.
Yeah, no, I'm always excited for what Mark Russell's going to do or Ed Brubaker.
I guess Jeff Johns doesn't really have anything going on right now. True. I know that he's supposed to be doing whatever Joker 3 Worlds or whatever and stuff. But yeah, I'd like to see him because I thought Doomsday Clock was excellent. We'll probably talk about it next week because I know Pat wanted to talk about it and I definitely want to reread it so I don't stumble because I read that first thing 2 weeks ago. So it's not fresh in the memory, but I did enjoy it. And then how much longer do you think it'll be till Saga comes back? Yeah. Someday, maybe. I just can't imagine why it's been this long. And I think they're going to see some heavy attrition, sadly.
How long did they say it was going
to
be?
Supposed to be off for a year. It's already been over a year and nothing's been solicited.
It's been more than a year.
So right? It's like just people's buying habits change. You know, it's like, and sadly I hear from stores that were selling, like it was a good seller for me, but nothing ridiculous. But for some stores it was ridiculous. Like Challengers was talking, they would sell 100 copies of the trade and 100 copies of each issue. So that's a big loss not to have that for a year. But the problem is then they face is, okay, when it comes back, are they still going to sell those numbers? Or, you know, what percentage of the customers have moved on and aren't reading comics? You know, because the other problem they had is a lot of those people, that was the only book they were getting, like Walking Dead. There's people I just don't see anymore because that was the only thing they got. And there was the hope maybe they'd see something else. But now that they're not coming in at all, you know, they're definitely not going to see something else. So, this one's for you guys. This is from Mr. Ludwig. Says, any resolutions for your comic reading or buying habits?
I like to get the collection in control. Like, you know, bagged, boarded properly, you know, put away. Instead of just kind of being, like, stacked and they're bagged and boarded, but they're not put away. That's a whole mess.
That's a never-ending process for me of trying to...
Just under control, not done, but manageable.
That's the good way to put it, because I would love to be, under control.
I wanted, so if people see it, they don't look at me like, what's wrong with you? Like,
oh, don't worry about that.
Yeah.
James asks, thoughts on Rise of Skywalker or The Mandalorian? Well, I have watched both, so I can certainly pontificate on those. Spencer?
I have watched Skywalker. Okay. I haven't watched Mandalorian. Okay.
I watched all of Mandalorian last night.
Oh wow. Yeah. Crazy man. I watched it weekly when it came out. I enjoyed Mandalorian a lot, not to give any specifics, but it was just a nice Western...
I thought it was really well done.
I thought it was enjoyable overall. Yeah, I thought I really did enjoy that. It was nothing. It wasn't movie worthy, but it was just enjoyable for a weekly TV show. I thought it was good.
I thought it was cool. There's a lot of surprises. You know, bringing different things back from the past.
Movies. Jar Jar was a huge surprise.
Did the Mandalorian just like shoot him in the face like as soon as he popped on?
No. He rescued the baby Yoda at the end. It was pretty impressive. But Rise of Skywalker, not to go super in depth, there's lots of movie podcasts. I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
I thought the beginning was completely disjointed, and it felt like a bunch of different ideas that they just kind of mushed together and didn't have enough time to flesh out, and I just felt a little lost. At the beginning, happening.
I heard somebody describe the beginning as kind of like an Indiana Jones movie, kind of just with like all...
Just they were doing stuff with no explanation, and I don't quite know what was going on at the beginning. Overall, I enjoyed it. There were lots of little nitpicks and things like that. You know, Rey just showed that, you know, her first scene was her floating, and then all of a sudden she's stuck in quicksand. It's like she couldn't just float out of the quicksand. Yeah. Just things where that you shouldn't be thinking at the moment, you know, where you're like, well, that's really not a problem, because...
Well, that's the one thing always with, like, Star Wars movie. I'm just like, why don't they use the Force? Mm-hmm. Why aren't they using the Force right now? Mm-hmm.
It was okay. There was a lot I didn't like. Lots of, you'd kind of go, what? I liked the ending. I didn't like the kiss, but it had a good, you felt uplifted at the end.
Yeah.
See, I didn't like the kiss, but then him dying immediately afterwards, I was kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, all right.
Yeah.
If he was still alive afterwards, I would have been like, that was dumb.
Right. Yeah. I healed you, and you healed me, and I healed... No. But... No, it was fine. It just, I don't think it'll match the original trilogy as far as emotion, but that's because I'm old, and I saw those when I was younger. Right. And...
I enjoyed it, though. I thought it was a fitting end to everything. And a lot of fan service people might be mad about that, but that doesn't make me mad.
No.
As long as they do it well.
I won't go into spoilers, I guess. But a lot of people show up from some past movies. And
yeah.
It's just too bad Carrie Fisher had to die.
Right, and it made all of her scenes a little more awkward.
Yeah.
Because you know what? They weren't filmed for that. And it's like they were, you know, either using existing footage or was it CGI? You know, so every time she was on screen, it was kind of a little, And then her death was just kind of weird and just...
I do have to say, one of the best acting jobs, though, was Chewbacca when Leia died.
Cause
That really pulled in my... And my heartstrings, Jonas Uomo did such, he did a good job, you know, conveying his emotion, I thought, in that scene. That was really sad.
Looks like I heard somebody say that's like, that was like his last, like, original friend, like, you know, that was the last one left.
I know, they all,
Now you're stuck with all these new people.
Well, even like C-3PO saying, I'm looking at my friends for the last time, I'm like, these aren't your friends, you just met these people, I found that was some odd things. So, but that's all we got for questions. Yeah, again, I have no news. Mm-mm. So I know Dave has extensive notes.
I do have.
So Spencer, notes. Why don't you start, and then Dave will finish up.
All right.
I sadly have failed this podcast and did not read much at all. Just with the holidays and everything, I just ran out of time. I had grand aspirations. I have a big pile.
Jokes.
Spencer read a lot too.
Yeah, I had a whole bunch come out.
Yeah, go ahead, Spencer.
But we'll hold off for Doomsday Clock for next week. Yeah. So.
Joker's Killer Smile number 2. This new therapist who's been working with the Joker. This issue it starts to show he's starting to crack a little bit under the pressure, he's lashing out at it, his wife and his son, and just starting acting really weird, and then during one of his sessions with the Joker, he mentions the wife and kid by name, and he gets all upset, and basically the big reveal of this issue is that because originally in the beginning of the story, he was only supposed to be working with the Joker for 3 weeks, and it turned out instead of being 3 weeks, it's been 3 years. So they show him finally go back to his house, and there's just the dishes are just piled up in the sink because the wife hasn't been there. He's just sleeping on a bed. It doesn't even have any bedding or anything on it and stuff like that. And he goes back into this basement and paints his face up like a clown and if he says something, I forget what he says, but it's still a pretty decent issue, but it was cool just seeing this guy slowly figure out that he might be losing it, and with him being a therapist and trying to go through that, I thought it was a really good issue. Let's see. Flash forward. I think it was issue 4. This is just still pretty standard with Wally racing to these different multi universes in the multiverse to try to save it from the energy seeping in from the dark multiverse. But in the big difference in this issue is the war that he's on, there's already a speedster, and it's Linda his wife from his own universe that still doesn't know him because of the whole Flashpoint and all that stuff. But they end up working together to, you know, stop the energy from the black multiverse energy from seeping in. They eventually have to, you know, go separate ways afterwards and stuff. And Barry went trying to travel back to I can't think of the big weird yellow horn guy that like was showing up and said like I can't think of his name, Mephisto or something or other. He lands, instead of going to see him, he lands on this ruins where they show in the first issue where he finds the kids that he's also lost with the whole Flashpoint stuff. And as soon as he sees him, he runs over, he gives him a big hug, and then the last page ends with, like, something coming at them, and, like, they have to run to get away, so... And then, Nightwing, number 67. So, at this point,
How's Rick doing?
He's fully brainwashed now from his great-grandfather, kicking the crap out of all the new Nightwings, and messing up real bad, throwing knives into them and sticking knives into their foot and all that kind of stuff. And when he's getting ready to go in for a kill blow on one of them, this like red winged like armored guy showed up. He didn't look familiar to me at all. I don't know if he's supposed to be some new character. He's supposed to be like worked for the government as like a civilian advance thing. He was there for the doom symbol in the sky and stuff, and saw this happening and intervened. And so they start fighting. They fight all the way over to to this bridge, like almost kind of like a Golden Gate kind of bridge, like a big one where like you where they can fight on top of them. And Dick Grayson as the new Talon gets the upper hand on him, and with one of his blows knocks like off the part of the helmet, and as he's getting ready to go in for the kill blow, the guy's like begging him to, you know, to stop and stuff like that, and then he finally eventually stops, and then he takes off the Talon mask and like he's smiling, and kind of like looking at the camera, so it seems like he's back, but like. But that's where the issue ends. But like I think I saw in the solicit coming up, it's like he's now gonna be like wrestling around with like all these different like the two kind of sets of memories that's going on in his head. So I think he's close to getting back to where he normally should be, but not quite there. But the series has been picking up better in quality, even if you're not quite a fan of the direction that it's going, the quality of it is still there.
You ready for him to get back to normal, though?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I wouldn't even mind, like, because, like, he's been working around with these other Nightwings, so, like, even if, like, well, if he became Nightwing again and he was still with those guys, like, I like those characters. I think that could be kind of cool, too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's weird seeing like any of the Batman books when they're having like a family thing and he's not there. Right, it's weird, like
yeah,
like he wasn't in the, like you know him not being in the last issue of Batman, you know, of Batman's Tom King run, like you know what I mean? That was just kind of weird, like you know. Yeah. Batman Superman number 5. Batman and Superman are going up against the Infected, or the Secret Six, I think is what they're calling them. Superman basically, because there is a satellite that's supposed to, you know, bringing the Dark Universe over, so, like, Superman has to try to get rid of the satellite while going against King Shazam and Supergirl that are infected, and Batman's stuck fighting against Hawkman. I can't think of what his infected name is, but Hawkman and Donna Troy, those infected, and it's cool, there's a scene where they're in the fight in the Fortress of Solitude, and Batman speaks Krypton to, like, unlock the zoo so that the all the animals would be released and would, like, go and, you know, and, like, kind of like, help, or not necessarily help them, but, like, as they escape, like, ran over the infected characters and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So they stop this plot from happening, but as they did that, the Batman Who Laughed escaped, you know, as he does. But now, because during this whole first story arc, they've been keeping this whole, like, infected thing a secret from all the other heroes, and now they're finally getting ready to tell everybody else the truth, and then, like, in the last page, Wonder Woman shows up. So that should be pretty good next issue. What else? Baskets Full of Heads, number 3.
Okay.
Have you been reading this, Dave?
I haven't read any of those. Those are the Joe Hill books.
Yeah, right? This is the only one that I read because Joe Hill's actually writing it. Those other ones seem pretty cool, but I'm, like, with them being miniseries, it's kind of hard just to not be, like,
trade. I thought he was, like, writing all of them.
He's overseeing them, it's kind of like his imprint, like, you know?
Right.
But, like, he's writing this one, and then I think in last previews he had another one coming out.
From you guys talking, though, they've all been pretty good.
Yeah. So, this issue, it's mostly spent with the main character who has the axe, who has the ability to, whenever they cut off somebody's head, they still are alive and are able to talk and stuff like that.
Okay.
So most of this issue is spent with her talking to this convict's head that she chopped off, and this is like, she's trying to figure out, is this actually happening? Is she going crazy? And the guy, he's trying to, it'd be funny because there would be times, like, he was trying to be nice to her and stuff, because, like, you know, without her, he's kind of screwed, like, because he can't go nowhere. But then she would say something and he'd, like, snap at her and get all angry. But she's trying to get information out of him about, like, why did she come to the house and stuff like that. And the reason was because her boyfriend, who was a deputy sheriff for the summer at this town that they live in, found, like, there was, like, an accident, off where the chain gang was working that he was keeping an eye on, and there was a whole bunch of money there, and him and, like, the police officers, you know, didn't put the money into evidence. They kept it. So that's why when they broke out, they were trying to go there. They were trying to find the money, and that's why the other convicts took the boyfriend, is because the money, to take him to where the money was. But then she's why, because it's this huge storm's going on. So she's walking down the street, trying to find help because there's no power or anything like that. And one of the other police officers drives by and picks her up, and so she puts the because he's driving, like, a pickup truck, and so she puts the basket with the dude's head in it, you know, in the trunk, is like, you know, telling him to be quiet, you know, you don't want, you know, him to hear you or anything like that, and they're talking, and as they're talking, they're finally, they're driving down this road, and there's a tree down, and, so she has the axe, so she's like, well, I'll go and I'll try to start cutting it, seeing if I can cut it down a little bit so we can maybe move it or whatever, so the guy goes into his truck to get some tools, and that's when she sees the basket and stuff like that. And and the it turns out that the guy that the guy who picked her up is in is in on the money and stuff like that, and starts to attack her, and that's kind of where like where that issue ends with her passing out and not knowing what's really going on. But like I said, I think this is the third issue. I think it's like six issues long. But it's been pretty good. I've been enjoying the series, and I think that's about it. I think I might have read some other stuff, but Dave might have read it, so I'll chime in if.
Okay, hang on one sec, Dave.
I'm sorry.
Battery change break. Dave, what did you read?
I read Claws, after Claws in the Life and Times of Joe Christmas. It was great.
Good.
It was unbelievable. But it's just, it's done in an advent calendar form. And it's there's no words. It's like 25 images of the life of Joe Christmas, who is kind of Claus' sidekick. From when he was like found as an orphan in 1930, I think it goes up to like 2001 when he was 70 years old. But the art is amazing, Dan Moore's art. Each page, each of this like two-page spreads, they could be a story unto themselves. Because there's images, you know, of Claus and Joe Christmas and their adventures, you know, throughout their lives. And there's one image of like a fruitcake meteor coming toward Earth. And both of them, you know, are holding giant forks. And there's one of Claus meeting the Beatles, and you know, we were driving around in a van. And there's one of one is an homage to the classic Days of Future Past cover with some villain named Sinterklaas, with Sinterklaas is watching you. With Claus and Joe Christmas and the Wolverine and Kitty Pryde poses. And, man, it was just so good. I just love the book so much.
So, how many, because, like, there's the main series that we did for book club.
Yeah.
And isn't there a couple of these, like, one-shots?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, I think this is I think it's the fourth one-shot.
Because they're just like once a year, right?
Yeah. Yeah, just once a year, week before Christmas. And, man, it's just so much fun. Because I did read, like, Grant Morrison said, you know, he didn't have time to, like, write out, you know, full dialogue for, or come up with a story with, you know, full dialogue because he's so busy this year or last year. But I thought it worked. It was fantastic.
See, I'd be interested to see how those are, because I just, with reading the series, I really like the series that we did for book club.
Oh, good, yeah. Skull Digger and Skeleton Boy.
Well, how was that? That seemed interesting.
This
like,
was really good.
This one almost made me think of, like, I might have to get a Black Hammer book, like, series in floppies almost.
What?
Yeah.
I think you don't need to know like anything about the Black Hammer universe to jump into this one.
It just seemed interesting,
especially if you like Batman or Punisher.
Yeah,
this is right up your alley.
Who's the artist for this book?
His name's Tonci Zonjic, TonciZonjic. I'm not familiar with him, but man, the art's great. But it's about. It takes place in Spiral City, where it starts with a 12-year-old boy. His parents are killed after they leave an Italian restaurant. And right after they're killed, Skull Digger shows up. And he kills the robber. His weapon is like a skull on the end of a chain. You know, beats the guy with his skull chain, and he apologizes to the kid. He says, "I'm sorry, I'm too late. I was too late for you. I'm sorry." So we meet some other characters, Detective Reyes, who's told not to investigate Skull Digger, and the villain Grim Jim, who showed up he showed up in some other Black Hammer books. He escapes from prison, and we also see I'm calling it the Skull Cave, but apparently the Skull Digger works at a butcher shop, and the Skull Cave is underneath the butcher shop. But it gets interesting at the end because at the end, Skull Digger gets the kid out of this juvenile psychiatric ward that he's in, and then he's going to become Skeleton Boy. And the narration at the end is that the kid, you know, says to himself, "Little did I know that Skull Digger was the real enemy."
Mm.
So it's just it is really well done.
When do you think this takes place? Because it seems like the majority of the Black Hammer stuff seemed to be in the 80s, when I read it. And I was wondering if this is him going into taking over the 90s, kind of. Because it almost kind of seems very you were saying, Punisher, 90s, and the violence and stuff that.
Yeah. It does. I don't think it says, what, if it's, in the current continuity of the Black Hammer book, of the latest most recent Black Hammer book. But, he says, it's his tribute to Frank Miller, Jeff Lemire said. So maybe it does take place, in the 80s, early 90s. But it was great. Folklords, number two.
Not yet, yeah.
I won't give too much away then, but this is the kid, this fantasy story, this kid Ansel, he's trying to find the folklords, which is our universe. And this has, so he's off, with his friend Archer, who's an elf. He's the only elf in the village. We get a little bit of backstory about Archer and how he was found by his parents, and the mother said the kid was cursed and threw the father to get rid of him before the mother died. And this is they're in the woods, and they're having a lot of fun playing with all these fairy tale tropes. I think we're getting a take on Hansel and Gretel right now, because they find a girl named Greta who's separated from her brother, and the villain is the Weeping Woodkiller, who poisons his victims with a piece of candy that has a seed in it. So when they die, their bones become a tree of bones.
Okay,
so it's really fresh. I mean, this could be really well worn and tired, a situation like this. But man, it was really good. And American Jesus.
I read that.
New Messiah, number one. Okay, good, Spencer. This is a sequel to.
Well, kind of like a prequel.
We're kind of like a prequel.
Yeah, because I think the first series took place it came out 10 years ago, but I think that time, this seems to be like the 80s.
Yeah, it takes place in 74.
Okay, 70s.
The young Hispanic girl, Luciana, is having dreams. She becomes pregnant, even though she's never had sex. And and she's having dreams that she's pregnant with Jesus, with the Messiah. And then she's visited by the guy in the white suit.
Yeah, and the mustache.
And mustache.
He kind of reminded me of a more neat version of that Donnie Trejo guy. The guy with all the tattoos that.
Right, that's true. And he tells her that the Antichrist has been planning this for years to take over the world. This is the typical Mark Miller, the sledgehammer approach.
Yeah.
As opposed to something like Second Coming, which is very nuanced, but it was okay.
Well, I was kind of thrown because the first series, it hadn't been that long. Like, I read the trade of it, like, a couple years ago. So it was kind of still, like, freshish in my mind. And I was figuring it to pick up, like, after, like, where that story ended. Yeah. I wasn't expecting this prequel thing.
Me too.
So that kind of threw me. But, yeah, I mean, it was all right. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't great.
And let's go back to Star Wars. I guess talk about Star Wars: The Rise of Kylo Ren.
I haven't read any of the Star Wars books.
This was just okay, I suppose. But it picks up right after Luke Acosta, you know, goes after Ben Solo. At, you know, his temple, and the temple, you know, and they burned the temple down. Ben burns the temple down, and three Jedi Luke is training are on their way back, and they find Ben, and they like tell him ask him what happened here, and he tells them that Luke is dead. And then Ben takes off in his ship and gets off the planet and goes to find Snoke. He's on some weird planet with, like, these mechanical, like, you know, constructs, you know, at each of the poles or something. And Snoke is in this it looks like he's in some kind of, like, agricultural biodome or something. Just kind of weird. I mean, we all know what the deal with Snoke is.
Yeah,
what the deal with Snoke is now.
I was gonna say, is it weird, like reading that stuff, knowing like the things that happened to some of the characters?
Yeah, but the interesting part of this, they go a little bit into the Knights of Ren in their initiation process, and I always like assumed that the Knights of Ren were like Ben's buddies that he was training with, but apparently they're not.
I just figured whoever kicked the puppies the hardest, that's who he'd like. It seemed like the kind of guys that he rolled with.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's kind of cool. The Knights of Ren stuff is probably the best part of the book.
Are you getting the actual, you get the Star Wars, like, the main title, right?
Yeah.
Are you looking, like, how do you think this new with Charles Soule is going to do?
No, I just read, like, the first, like, 10 pages, maybe.
Oh, did that come out today?
Yeah, it came out today. I just read about the first 10 pages, and I thought it's been really good so far. I mean, it starts right after The Empire Strikes Back.
Okay.
Of them, of Leia and Lando and Luke and the Millennium Falcon.
Cool.
Family Tree.
I read that.
Okay, great.
I was wondering if, with it being Lemire, I was wondering if you were gonna, if you got around to reading it.
Oh, yeah. This was good, and then it got really good.
Yeah.
On the last page when you figure out what's going on here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's the little girl, she's turned, branches growing out of her back, and she's growing into a tree. And then there's another.
And Grandpa shows up with his tree arm.
Grandpa shows up. But there's another part of this book.
They do a flashback.
They do a flashback of the grandpa with a tree creature, and they're in a hotel room. And
like something's hunting them.
And they're shot.
It was like Burner Brown.
Not that kind of work, Colin.
And then, at the very end, they stop at a gas station. And the guy pulls out his arm, and his one hand is wood, and he's talking to the hand. And the hand, that creature was the father.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because
the hand's like talking to him, or somehow he's communicating with it somehow.
Because it seems like, the father to the family that we saw in the first issue, he kind of just like upped and left. So because the reason that he did is because he was turned into like this tree creature thing, that, and somebody was hunting them. it seems to be something going on in their family, because like even the grandfather made something about like how he's been able to get people through this like before, like they were like going somewhere. So, but yeah, it seemed seemed pretty cool.
Yeah, that final page was great. That made me more invested in the series than ever. So that was great. And I'll stop there.
Okay.
Six.
Well, I will hold the three I read. I know a lot, everybody else probably read, so we'll wait for the whole crew to get here. It's Batman, Batman Last Night on Earth, and Doomsday Clock, and I fear we can have a good discussion about those three. So, I will hold off on those. So, that's all I got. So, next week, moving into probably a little more normal, like...
That'd be nice.
This week's stuff that we got, yeah, like heavy, heavy week, light week. Too light, like last week was nothing, this week was light. So hopefully we're shifting more into back to normal. Next week, Archie 1955, Dave, I know you're giddy about that. Batman 86, which is going to be the first issue of the James Tynion storyline. One I'm excited about is the David Bowie Stardust, Ray Guns, and Moon Age Daydreams hardcover done by Mike Allred. Oh, so I'm an Allred fan and a Bowie fan, so I'm excited about that book coming.
And so did you get a copy just for you?
Possibly. Clock number one, this is a new one from Image, another post-apocalyptic one. Daphne Byrne number one is the next in the Hill House books. Dollhouse Family number three is part of that is next week. Dragonfly and Dragonfly Man number three is next week. Excalibur number five. Fallen Angels number five, and there are more X books coming. Firefly Outlaw Ma Reynolds, it's just a little one shot spinning out of Firefly. We have Marvel's Avengers Thor, which is tying into the new video game. We have Marvel's X, which is, I guess, is a sequel to Marvel's, which made me laugh when we were talking about things that we want from Marvel and stuff. It's like, stop rehashing stuff that we have no idea how to order. Because, mm-hmm. I wasn't open when Marvel's came out. I wasn't even thinking of being open when Marvel's came out. So it's like, we have no idea how to order this book. Miles Morales, The End. They're doing a whole bunch of End books.
Oh, again, yeah.
This month, yeah.
And talk about rehashing stuff, yeah.
So they're doing this. New Mutants, number five. So that's our third X book of the week. Power Rangers Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number two. Ruins of Ravencroft Carnage. They're starting this big Ruins of Ravencroft thing. I think it's their version of Arkham Asylum at Marvel. Star number one. This is the character that's taking over for Captain Marvel. Stranger Things Into the Fire is a new miniseries with the Stranger Things kids.
Do those books sell?
They do. Yeah, they do quite well. Yeah, and the trade sold well at Christmas. It's like, my kid likes Stranger Things. Do you have anything? Yeah, I do. So that's nice to have. Symbiote Spider-Man, Alien Reality number two. Number one did really well. We'll see how number two does. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 101. Ooh. So we'll see the aftermath of that stuff. And X-Force number five. So four X-Books. They're killing it. They are trying to kill their readers. I'm sorry, but they are. So that's what we got. Starting the year... we have book club is coming up Friday. It's going to be Claws. And then next month, I already decided we're going to do These Savage Shores because it was my favorite book from last year, and I have them in stock, and I don't want to forget it. So I figure we'll tack that one in January. And then I asked him what we should do for the monthly feature, and he said, how about volume ones? So we're going to do double points on all volume ones.
Yeah, we had a discussion about that as I checked out and how evil he is.
Yes. Now, it's not only, so if it's like an only, it doesn't count, but just on volume ones to try that, to get you to try some new things. Since the weeks seem to be a little odd, it might be fun to find something that's already out there. So I think that's all we got. As always, you can find me, the website's PittsburghComics.com, Facebook is Pittsburgh Comics, Twitter and Instagram are PGH Comics. I'm going to be working a lot more there. I've got two big collections. One big one came in, one came in a while ago that I'm finally, hopefully, is ready to go. So I'll be doing a lot more posting on Instagram and stuff of cool back issue finds and... all sorts of neat stuff. I have lots of plans for 2020, and my New Year's resolution this year is actually to get stuff done, because I always have lots of ideas, and it's the implementation.
You're going to see, how much did you fill up that fancy notebook that you got? I remember for like the one of the sheets you had like a nice like leather bound
book. I haven't opened that up yet because I know I'm just going to scribble at it and write the same thing over and over. But I do have actually it's funny because I do actually have this big one like that that I got at I want to say Office Depot, and it was like in their clearance section. Well, but it's just a big journal, but it's really big hardcover, really nice, and it was like $2 or $3. Okay. I'm like I am going to use that and actually. Sit down and put, you know, in a hardcover book my ideas instead of just scribbling on a notepad things that I want to accomplish and see how much I can actually get done. None of it's super detailed or complicated. It's just time. And that's been my biggest enemy lately. Like, even thinking about to this weekend, just between, you know, visiting friends and relatives, and then I had Saturday night, Sunday morning was about the only time I had free. And I was working on some back issues and just time-consuming. It was 2 long boxes that came in, which was great, all bagged and boarded in order, but they all had price tags on them. So I had to take the price tags off. So I there am with my penknife taking the price tag, and it just took all Saturday night, you know, not every minute, but, you know, from when I got home at, you know, 7:30 and then went to bed. And then Sunday morning I did the other box, and it was like I got a little bit priced, but... It's like, then this time got away from me with holidays and everything. So, hoping to get on a little better schedule for myself and try to make sure I get stuff done. Here's always tough doing stuff, just because customers are
annoying.
No, not annoying or a problem, but it's like, oh, I want to do this between 11 and 3. Well, I can't because I don't know I'm going to be doing this and helping this guy and, you know, things like that. So it's hard. Unpredictable, I guess, is the word I was looking for.
Because you know, as soon as you like, you'd be sitting there all day not doing anything, and nobody would walk in. But as soon as you stand up do something, that's absolutely. When you get like 10 people come in.
It's like when I'd go down to do something in the basement. That's when the phone's ringing off the hook, and I'm getting called back up, and somebody brought in a collection. It was just I could sit up here all day, and none of that would happen until I do something. But it's always, if you're dead, put something in the microwave. It'll guarantee somebody comes in.
Yeah.
If you want the phone to ring, get on the ladder. guaranteed, as soon as you get on the ladder, the phone will ring. It's just, these are rules of retail. Not customers are annoying, but just unpredictable. And I can never, you know, I want to get this done, but that might not happen. So I need to write it out, and I need to write some stuff out for Tim so that he, you know, can do stuff without guidance. It's like, okay, I don't have anything to do, I'll attack this. So that's my goal for 2020, just better use of time, because I certainly have lots of ideas and goals and things I want to get done. It just drives me nuts. 2 years ago, on the way home from Portland, I was writing down some ideas that I had, and they were really good ideas, really neat things to do. And I haven't done any of it. I think it was summer 2018, I had this collection come in, and that gave me an idea, and I haven't implemented any of that. So it's just stuff I got to do. So you'll see. Keep an eye. But yeah, my goal is to just make things more fun on social media and on the website and stuff, just informational and stuff. So that's it. Spencer.
That's the podcast.
We will talk at you next week. See ya.